This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of January 8th, 2023. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. Welcome to edition number 272. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support The Breaker. On this edition, headlines from the Pacific Rim and the Pacific Northwest. I award a virtual Nanaimo bar to a difference maker. And the big deal feature. Logistics expert Glenn Ross returns for his first appearance of 2023 and looks ahead. How will inflation, supply chain challenges, war in Ukraine, and recession affect Wall Street and Main Street in 2023? But first, is it just me? Is it just me, or are you also tired of politicians who not only break promises, but act just like the predecessors who they criticized so much? That happened in BC with ex-NDP Premier John Horgan. In 2015, he was the opposition leader and Christy Clark of the BC Liberals was the premier. The Information and Privacy Commissioner agreed with a whistleblower and found oodles of evidence of mass deleting of public records in order to block freedom of information releases. Horgan said that Clark had fostered, quote, a culture of deception, deceit, and delete, end quote. Horgan promised to do something about it. After he came to power in 2017, he never fulfilled promises to improve the Freedom of Information Law, which a previous NDP government in 1993 gave the people of BC. In late 2021, Horgan went the other direction. He imposed a $10 application fee on requests. Call it what it really is, a tax on public information, a tax on the right to know. When David Eby became premier in November, I wanted to see the last text messages on Horgan's government-issued phone. So I paid the $10 tax and was told that they were all deleted because Horgan's text messages were of no lasting value. The word they used was transitory. I like to call it something else. Hypocrisy. What do you think? Email Bob at thebreaker.news. This is the big deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast. This is the big deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast, and our guest is Glenn Ross of ACC Group, a supply chain consultant who has his finger on the pulse of all things logistics, moving goods around the world, and the trends there that we've talked about in recent years with the pandemic and other factors. His weekly newsletter is very informative, and I encourage you to go to the ACC Group website, which we'll give you at the end of the interview. We've been talking before with Glenn on his previous visits with us on the Breaker.News podcast about shipping, especially shipping containers. There was a glut of freighters, container ships, especially on the west coast of North America throughout 2021 and 2022. Good news is that container dwell times have returned to pre-pandemic levels at Los Angeles and Long Beach ports, the biggest ones on the North American west coast. And West Coast ports in the U.S. are starting 2023 virtually congestion-free. Glenn, this is quite a turnaround, even though there are supply chain managers believing that supply chain problems will last until 2024, at least in one aspect, one very important aspect, things have turned around.
Yeah, you're right, Bob, and thanks for inviting me onto the show. The dwell times on the West Coast have dropped quite dramatically back to pre-COVID times. But let's not wax too lyrical on that, because even though they are down, it's also a factor of the dropped demand from America and EU on the Chinese manufacturing sector. Don't forget the Chinese manufacturing sector, which consigns 68% of all produced goods to the EU and the USA, is by in any type of definition an extension of those two economies. So when you have a drop in demand in both of those economies, like is happening now, there's a drop in demand on the Chinese side, which puts less pressure on the shipping side, which makes things a lot easier to handle. So right now, you know, there's a weekly dashboard that comes out, and the actual time of waiting off what they call drifting offshore is about 3 to 4 days at worst at the moment. It was up to 35, 40 days before. And of course, average time on berth is also down. And then, but the one that they're still trying to work on is the rail dwell. The rail dwell is a problem because of Memphis and Chicago, and now starting to climb in Kansas City and Salt Lake City, is where the rail reaches destination points, but they're still congested. They can't get the containers turned at the rail heads. So yes, but to answer your question, the ports on the West Coast are much, much different from 3 months, 4 months ago. But strangely enough and significantly enough, New York, New Jersey, which is normally number two port in the USA, is now suddenly number one port. They've overtaken LA Long Beach.
There were headlines that Vancouver's performance was among the worst in the world. What was that justified, and where is Vancouver in the scheme of things now?
Any such classification is always subjective, but Vancouver and Prince Rupert together rank in the bottom 10 out of 380 worldwide ports. Now, those are port authorities who do this all the time. They track a number of different indices. Vancouver port is not good. We know that the port itself is split into three or four different berthing zones, and you don't have much exit from the port of downtown. You've got to go up Knight Street. It's the same as LA with the heavyweight corridor, so that lends itself to congestion. But overall, we still haven't recovered, Bob, from 5 or 6 years ago when we had the trucker strike. And we lost about 15% of our volume. We still haven't recovered that volume. So it's a compound issue. And we need to do some very, very deep thinking infrastructurally in Canada, the US as well. You know, if you just think back in history, the ports haven't changed in over 200 years. All that's changed, we haven't got donkeys and horses anymore. Now we've got truck, tractors, and rail. But otherwise, they follow the same routes. They go to the same ports. They go to the same berths. They've never put thought into it. And it comes down to taxation. To make those changes, they have to increase taxes to fund those changes. And because it's all federally done, they won't do that because of election problems. And there's nobody out there in the private sector that's going to be wanting to put money into ports, which is an investment of minimal return.
Mm-hmm. Now, we're talking a lot about the supply side, but on the demand side, 2023 could be a very interesting year. There's a lot of forecasts of recession. There's inflation, high inflation, which is taking a bite out of the pocketbooks of consumers on Main Street in 2022. And it has eased a little bit, but it's not going away anytime soon. And it's a major reason why a lot of people are looking closely at 2023. There's one headline in your newsletter said U.S. inflation is peaking. And of course, there were impacts on the holiday shopping. But here we have storm clouds on the horizon. How is that going to affect things?
So let's split this into two different dimensions. The first one is the commercial one. So demand is down. Inflation is driven in large part by the price of diesel. Diesel affects everything, all deliveries, all parts, rail, shipping, it affects everything. So diesel right now is running around about, in the US, $5 and about $1.51 a litre up here. We expect it to drop in quarter two by about 9%, a further 14% in quarter three, and then climb slightly to 2-3% in quarter four of this year. That's going to have an effect on inflation. But inflation is here to stay, in my opinion. The world is changing. Ukraine is forcing that change in more ways than one. And particularly, and we'll get onto it, particularly from the green development as well as the inflationary aspect of food particularly. So inflation is here to stay. We have not yet seen the effect of the food inflation, which is going to rocket in the next 12 to 24 months. You know, if you're looking at phosphates, Canada's a large producer of phosphates, but we don't exploit it sufficiently enough. But Russia and Ukraine are the world's largest provider of phosphates, which is instrumental in the production of fertilizer. That isn't happening. Ukrainian wheat and grain exports are down by 60% because of the war. The Black Sea ports being blocked off. There's only 3 out of 15 ports in Ukraine being available. Even now, those are under threat. And if you look at all those bits and pieces that go into it between Russia and Ukraine, one of the largest of the six global bread baskets. Now, when you come down the road, you look at 70% of all the sunflower oil production in the world comes out of Ukraine. Right now, that's running about 5 to 10. There are three commonly accepted preservatives in food, canned fish and things like that. Those are olive oil, saline solution, and sunflower oil. So you can expect all those categories to rocket in price, which is going to push inflation up even further, if not at the very best, keep it with what it is now. So it's not a good situation. It's here to stay. The world is changing. that'll take 10 to 15 years, and we need to get used to it.
And along with the worries of recession, we're seeing a lot of layoffs, mass layoffs from some of the big corporations. You know, Meta, which is Facebook, had its layoffs. And of course, this week, there were about 18,000 layoffs announced for Amazon, the biggest reorganization in that company's history. And of course, that's a company which is heavily involved in moving goods and storing goods, as well as involved in digital technology. And of course, it's got a grocery arm through Whole Foods. What do these layoffs do for consumer confidence?
If you look at geopolitical developments, and the Ukraine war, in my opinion, is about China in 20, 25 years from now, because they, Russia and China, are trying to create a bipolar world order where you have a different reliance, and just not just on the dollar and the IMO and those places. So Ukraine is going to drain Russia right down. It's going to really bankrupt the country. And you'll see that in 6 to 12 months' time. But China is the bigger one of the two. China is the big brother in that relationship. And how do you reduce China's emergence without firing a shot? You go after the economy. 1.1 billion Chinese are peasants, and they earn less than the average Nigerian laborer does. So, again, because they are an export-dominated economy, they're down to, we think, about 2.8% GDP in 2023. They're trying to get it higher. But COVID has struck them again. As of yesterday, there are 5.4 million people affected by COVID in Shanghai alone. And it's running rampant. So they've gone from zero COVID tolerance to zero COVID testing. And now you're seeing the effect of that. So what people seem to forget about China is that, you know, the ports on the eastern seaboard are merely the export ports. All those rivers feed into those ports. And those rivers are all being affected with barges like the Mississippi. They've been affected. So we haven't seen even the tip of the return of the iceberg in that regard. But how do you emasculate the Chinese emergence and growth factor? You go after the economy. So if you can squeeze a recession in the US and the EU, whether it's manufactured recession or whatever the case is, without firing a shot, you reduce demand on China, which forces them to lay off workers in China, which then brings up the big question in their minds of another 1949 revolution. That's how you beat China in the next 10 months to 12 months, is to actually create a recession in the USA and the EU. That passes straight on to China with their 68% dependency. And they will have problems of their own that won't worry anybody else. Anyway, so that was the second dimension of that inflation discussion.
Mm-hmm.
On the question now about job layoffs, Amazon has always been a concern to me. Amazon is trying to reach, like CVS does, they're within 5 miles of 90% of the American population. So Amazon, with their same-day delivery promise, needs to have something similar from an effective perspective. So their main competitor here is Walmart. Not the same exact perspective, but certainly Walmart. But Walmart has literally about 3,500 mini warehouses. All their stores effectively are mini warehouses. And you order online, you pick up in the store, they deliver from their stores via that channel. So having said that, Amazon is trying to get the same effect, but they can't go out and do that. So they're building these mega facilities. And these facilities are some of those you go down to southern LA, southern part of Los Angeles, 2 million square feet. You go to Dallas, you go to Kansas City, they're huge facilities. But there's a recession starting to come around in America. If you go back to when COVID started, there was a change in the consumer demand. People stayed home. They had to stay home by selection or by decree. That meant there was a boom in home electronics, laptops, PCs, exercise equipment. At the same time, the Americans opted to leave the global International Postal Union Agreement, which opened the door for Chinese direct home deliveries in the USA. So two things happened. One was a huge boom in home sales, direct-to-consumer sales, D2C. And also the Chinese entered. And then Walmart reacted to that by going on a splurge of trying to meet this demand. But now that COVID's coming down, and now the people, you don't buy 10 laptops, you buy one laptop, you buy one exercise machine. So that demand peak, that product curve is now sort of saturated. It's flattened, which means there's a drop in demand for something that Amazon went out and really, really boosted its capacity of. So now they're stuck with all these extra people, extra facilities, and extra stock. You know, so that's coming back to hurt them. So this is not the first one. They laid off a lot of people in November last year. This is the 18,000, and it's a whole bunch of roles they're laying off as well, not just people. Expect to see more and more of that. It speaks to the hidden elephant in the room, which is the inventory levels in the United States. Inventory of the wrong stuff is lying everywhere. People built up, they bought all these new laptops, these new exercise machines, these home exercise stuff. Now they're stuck with that. It's a huge problem for retail. Huge. It runs into the billions of dollars. Walmart, Sears, Target, they've all got the problem. And that is all going to boost inflation going forward. So it's all linked in one way or another, Bob.
That was my guest, Glenn Ross of ACC Group in Surrey, British Columbia. Go to accgroupco.com for more information. That's accgroupco.com.
Thanks, Bob, and I hope you have a great day.
Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim. In the Taiwan news, North Taiwan High School accused of turning campus into wine cellar. Paul Su Senior High School criticized for leasing unused space to alcohol business. An alcohol company had set up a cooled storage room in the school's parking lot. Taoyuan City Government's Department of Education said it was permissible as long as shipments were transported during lunch break or after school hours. Liberty Times reported that though students believe the school should be a place for studying and not allow alcohol storage on campus, the principal said the decision was an attempt to add a source of income for the school. In Kyoto news, Japan's new car sales fall 5.6% in 2022 to lowest level in 45 years. Domestic auto sales in 2022 declined for the fourth consecutive year to 4.2 million. And dropped to their lowest level since 1977, when about 4.19 million vehicles were sold. Sales of cars other than mini vehicles fell 8.3% to 2.5 million units, according to the Japan Automobile Dealers Association data. By brand, Toyota saw a drop of 12.4% to 1.2 million units, while Nissan sales slipped 0.8% to about 272,000 vehicles. Honda sold almost 270,000 units, down 1.9%. In Hong Kong Free Press, Hong Kong to reopen four border checkpoints as mainland China scraps most COVID travel rules. Four border checkpoints, land crossings at Lok Mau Chau Station and Man Kam To, and seaports at the Macau Ferry Terminal and China Ferry Terminal will resume operation. Hong Kong will accept up to 50,000 mainland visitors per day via its land ports. All cross-border travelers must obtain a negative result from a COVID-19 PCR test. Both physical or electronic proof will be accepted, taken within 48 hours of travel. That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast. Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest. In the Oregonian, singer Woody Guthrie's rented flat in Lentz is for sale. His Portland legacy remains. Social activist and songwriter Woody Guthrie spent less than a month in Portland. He wrote Roll On, Columbia, Roll On, along with more than two dozen other songs in an inspirational flurry while traveling the Pacific Northwest in May 1941. It became the official folk song of Washington State. Guthrie's flat, a converted fourplex at 6107 Southeast 92nd Avenue, is now for sale for $975,000. In the Spokane Spokesman Review, justice was done today. Former Spokane County employee who stole $1.4 million, sentenced to 1 year in prison. Rhonda Sue Ackerman, 53, was sentenced to 1 year in prison with credit for time served. She has been in jail since late September. Ackerman worked for the Spokane County Risk Management Department as a liability claims technician when she defrauded the county between 2007 and 2016. She had been a county employee since 2001. She spent the money on gambling, taking vacations, and buying lavish gifts. In the Victoria Times Colonist, Butchart Gardens announces two-week closure to give staff a break. The gardens will be closed to the public from January 23rd to February 5th inclusive due to a busy 2022. 12-month pass holders for 2023 will get a 14-day extension into 2024, said the Gardens.
That's Cascadia calling on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast. It don't matter what color you are, 'cause love will conquer hate.
Virtual Nanaimo Bar, brought to you by Spruce Hill Contracting.
Every week we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo Bar to people making a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to
health service providers across British Columbia, from rehabilitation to laboratories, and from emergency care to seniors care and everything in between. January is Health Service Providers Month in BC. Thank you.
You can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo Bar. Send me an email to bob@thebreaker.news. Spruce Hill Contracting, custom homes and renovations. Find more information at sprucehill.ca.
That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for the week of January 8th, 2023. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on the 8th of January in 1973, 50 years ago, the trial of seven men who broke into the Democratic Party headquarters at the Watergate Hotel begins? Now you know. Send me your feedback. Send me your story ideas to bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the email newsletter and get updates to your inbox. For news as it happens, follow The Breaker News on Twitter and visit TheBreaker.News on Facebook. You can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/TheBreakerNews. That's patreon.com/TheBreakerNews.
Until next week.